He heard it too, the music that described his whole life. He realized for the first time how full of sadness his existence was. He was surrounded by mean-spirited men and women who hated him and were secretly jealous of his talent. He knew now that every angry thought he had ever had was justified, and that every generous thought was misplaced. His enemies were despicable, and his friends were treacherous. Narl, naturally, was worst of all. But even Arabella was weak and unworthy of his love.
"Ah," sighed His Majesty, "so you have been betrayed too."
"Yes," said Strange sadly. They were facing the wood again. The lights among the trees, tiny as they were, conveyed to Strange a strong idea of the house and its comforts. He could almost see the soft candlelight falling upon the comfortable chairs, the ancient hearths where cheerful fires blazed, the glasses of hot spiced wine, which would be provided to warm them after their walk through the dark wood. The lights suggested other ideas, too.
"I think there is a library," he said.
"Oh, certainly," declared the king, clapping his hands together in his enthusiasm. "You shall read the books, and when your eyes grow tired, I shall read them to you. But we must hurry. Listen to the music. He grows impatient for us to follow him."
His Majesty reached out to take Strange's left arm. In order to accommodate him, Strange found that he must move something he was holding in his left hand. It was Ormskirk's Revelations of 36 Other Worlds.
"Oh, that," he thought. "Well, I don't need that any longer. There are sure to be better books at the house in the wood."
He opened his hand and let Revelations fall upon the snowy ground. The snow fell thicker. The flute player played. They hurried towards the wood. As they ran, the king's scarlet nightcap fell over his eyes. Strange reached up and straightened it. As he did so, he suddenly remembered what it was that he knew about the color red. It was powerful protection against enchantment.
"Hurry, hurry!" cried the king.
The flute player played a series of rapid notes which rose and fell to mimic the sound of the wind. A real wind appeared out of nowhere and half lifted, half pushed them over the ground towards the wood. When it set them down again, they were a great deal nearer to the wood.
"Excellent!" cried the king.
The nightcap caught Strange's eye again. Protection against enchantment. The flute player conjured up another wind. This one blew the king's nightcap off.
"No matter, no matter," cried the king cheerfully. "He has promised me nightcaps aplenty when we get to his house."
Strange let go of the king's arm and staggered back through the snow and the wind to fetch it. It lay in the snow, bright scarlet among all the misty shades of white and grey. Protection against enchantment. He remembered saying to one of the Willises that in order to practice magic successfully, a magician must employ the forcefulness of his own character. Why should he think of that now? "Place the moon at my eyes," he thought, "and her whiteness shall devour the false sights the deceiver has placed there." The moon's scarred white disk appeared suddenly, not in the sky, but somewhere else. If he had been obliged to say exactly where, he would have said that it was inside his own head. The sensation was not a pleasant one. All he could think of, all he could see, was the moon's face like a sliver of ancient bone. He forgot about the king, he forgot he was a magician, he forgot Mr. Narl, he forgot his own name. He forgot everything, except the moon. The moon vanished. Strange looked up and found himself in a snowy place a little distance from a dark wood. Between him and the wood stood the blind king in his dressing gown. The king must have walked on when he stopped, but without his guide to lean on, the king felt lost and afraid. He was crying out,
"Magician! Magician! Where are you?"
The wood no longer struck Strange as a welcoming place. It appeared to him now as it had at first. Sinister, unknowable, un-English. As for the lights, he could barely see them. They were the merest pricks of white in the darkness, and suggested nothing except that the inhabitants of the house could not afford many candles.
"Magician!"
cried the king.
"I am here, your majesty."
"Place a swarm of bees at my ears," he thought. "Bees love truth and will destroy the deceiver's lies." A low, murmuring noise filled his ears, blocking out the music of the flute player. It was very like language, and Strange thought that in a little while he would understand it.
It grew, filling his head and his chest to the very tips of his fingers and toes. Even his hair seemed electrified, and his skin buzzed and shook with the noise. For one horrible moment, he thought that his mouth was full of bees, and that there were bees buzzing and flying under his skin, in his guts and his ears. The buzzing stopped. Strange heard the flute player's music again, but it did not sound as sweet as before, and it no longer seemed to be describing his life. "Place salt in my mouth," he thought, "lest the deceiver attempt to delight me with the taste of honey or disgust me with the taste of ashes." This part of the spell had no effect whatsoever. "Nail my hand with an iron nail, so that I shall not raise it to do the deceiver's bidding."
"Ah, dear God!"
screamed Strange. There was an excruciating pain in the palm of his left hand. When it ceased, as suddenly as it had begun, he no longer felt compelled to hurry towards the wood.
"Place my heart in a secret place, so that all my desires shall be my own, and the deceiver shall find no hold there."
He pictured Arabella, as he had seen her 1,000 times, prettily dressed and seated in a drawing room among a crowd of people who were all laughing and talking. He gave her his heart. She took it and placed it quietly in the pocket of her gown. No one observed what she did. Strange next applied the spell to the king, and at the last step, he gave the king's heart to Arabella to keep in her pocket. It was interesting to observe the magic from the outside. There had been so many unusual occurrences in the king's poor head that the moon's sudden appearance there seemed to occasion him no surprise. But he did not care for the bees. He was brushing them away for some time afterwards. When the spell was finished, the flute player abruptly ceased playing. "And now, Your Majesty," said Strange, "I think it is time we return to the castle. You and I, Your Majesty, are a British king and a British magician. Though Great Britain may desert us, we have no right to desert Great Britain. She may have need of us yet."
"True, true. I swore an oath at my coronation always to serve her. Oh, my poor country."
The king turned and waved in the direction he supposed the mysterious flute player to be.
"Goodbye. Goodbye, dear sir. God bless you for your kindness to George the Third."
Revelations of 36 other worlds lay half covered up by the snow. Strange picked it up and brushed off the snow. He looked back. The dark wood had gone. In its place was a most innocent clump of 5 leafless beech trees.